Welcome to the fourth episode of the Braai Box podcast. My name is Pieter de Villiers and this is Rion Knutzer, and we are the co-hosts of the Braai Box podcast. This podcast was started with the aim of providing free financial education to all South Africans with the hope of helping everyone better understand their personal finances to uplift them out of their circumstances. So today we're going to have quite an interesting conversation. We're going to talk about financial freedom. We're going to discuss what that means, how do we determine the amount, and how we can actually become financially free. This is kind of the epitome of what we're trying to achieve with personal finances and the kind of vision at the end of the rainbow that we're all working towards. So I'm going to kick it off today. But before we start, we are going to review Oma Rusk's biscakies. So with every episode, we're going to try and review a beverage or a food item that's, you know, classic South African. And you know, we all love a nice little rusk or biscakie from Oma.
Thanks, Oma. Feel like our South Africans have the best Omas.
Yeah.
Previous episode, we had a cook sister. Today, we have a nice biscuit. If you don't mind, rusk. I'm going to do it right off the bat because my coffee is getting cold.
So Rion basically finished his old coffee before the episode started. but yeah, rusk is, and I've been overseas once, or actually I've attended a conference in South Africa when people from overseas attended as well. And during the break time, someone came to me and like, how do you eat these cookies? I'm like, what are you recording? What are you referring to? And they're like, no, there's white cookies on the table. So I was like, the rusks. She says, yes, it's so dry. Because they ate it like just off the bat. Just like, no, man, you're doing it wrong. Get out. So yeah, you dip it into your coffee or your tea or mostly just coffee and tea. I don't know what else.
You can probably dunk it in hot chocolate as well, I guess.
You can.
If you really want to.
And then it makes it nice and soggy and have that nice sweet taste that we all love. Brings us together, especially in the cold weather that we are still experiencing in Cape Town. Apparently, there's another storm on its way. But yeah, hopefully everyone will be safe.
Yeah, and I found a new leak in my roof as well, just by the way. So now it's the chimney and another leak. So it's starting to get expensive this winter.
Yeah, it is. It's never fun to hear the drip, drip, drip sound and then
especially if it's like midnight.
Yeah,
and already it's usually and it's like, oh, hello.
It's usually at the middle of the night and it's most inconvenient. but yeah, Rion, why don't you kick us off? What is the definition of financial freedom?
The definition of financial freedom is really to have income from assets that is more than your expenses. So I think the important thing here is that it's not your salary or anything that you work for, but it's income generated through assets that actually gives you that income that's more than your expenses. So it's effectively saying that if I stop working or if I lost my job today, everything will go on as normal. I will live the same lifestyle through the income from my assets.
Yeah. So I think people oftentimes confuse retirement with financial freedom. Whilst it may be the same thing, retirement is kind of classic. When retirement, the word was invented was, I think it was back in the 1900s I think it was around about the time where the Industrial Revolution started, where you had to work for an employer. And then by the age of 65, they realized you're now old, not useful anymore. You need to go. And here's a package for you to survive. And that kind of just stuck around forever. Up until today, we still consider age 65 as being, you know, age of retirement, where the idea is that you've worked your entire life to build up assets that you would have invested, providing you with an income that you can then live off until you eventually pass away. So that is one aspect of it. But financial freedom also means you can reach that level basically where your assets are more than your expenses much earlier than retirement. It's dependent on a couple of factors. It's how much you spend, how much you plan to spend, and how much you've invested. So it doesn't mean you have to wait until retirement to be financial free. You can do that much earlier, but it is more difficult.
Yeah. And I think just because you mentioned that retirement is normally where you want to be financially free. Because if you aren't, then that's naturally an issue. And I think that's probably one of the statistics we did mention in one of our previous episodes, that only 6% of people can actually retire with the same lifestyle.
Yeah.
So it's a very small amount of people by retirement that actually achieves financial freedom. But you're quite right. It can happen a lot earlier. And I think that should be the aim for all of us that's on the show. And why I'm saying that is it puts you in such a powerful position if you have financial freedom. So you can literally decide, you know what, I want to change my career or I want to jump into another business or anything like that, because you know your monthly expenses is covered, you know your family is looked after, and your lifestyle won't be, you know, drastically dropped if you make the decision.
No, it's working because you want to, not because you have to. It's giving you the wealth of options that you can say, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I can now just do this because my expenses are covered. There's a big movement behind the financial freedom, FIRE movement, financial independence, retire early. Maybe a good topic for episode for future, where this is exactly what they try to do. They try to get to that number, that golden number, as soon as possible, as early as possible, so that they can, you know, enjoy life the way that, or at least live life on their own terms. So on that.
Yeah, I don't think the FIRE movement, sorry, Peter, to interrupt you, I don't think the FIRE movement is for everyone, because it's really drastically cutting down on expenses, yeah, etc., to really get this going as soon as possible. So it's maybe not for everyone, but it is, yeah, definitely something to look at if you're interested in retiring early or retiring like Peter wants to at 40. How many years do you have left? 35. Yeah, like what, six years now.
6 years before retirement.
Okay. Yeah, well, we'll see. Nothing is impossible, I guess.
Yeah. No, I made the commitment 2 years ago, probably further away than I was 2 years ago, but it's fine. Got a plan to get there. Awesome. So now that we understand what financial freedom is, how do we know how much is enough to achieve financial freedom? Is there like a way to determine?
Well, there's an easy way, and I think that's probably the best way for the forum that we're in today. There's an easy calculation that you can do that I've gotten from the book from Warren Ingram, Become Your Own Financial Advisor. And what he basically says is you need to take your monthly expenses, annualize it, and then divide it by 4%. So what I mean by annualize is effectively just taking your monthly expenses, times it by 12, and then divide it by 4%. And why we're using this 4% is really the value that was done in a research study in saying that if you've got this 4% and you only draw 4% from your fund every year, that fund should last you for up to 30 years, right? So it gives you a good almost guide in terms of how much you need for financial freedom. I think important to mention here is it is a guide. So it's not a hard set number in terms of if you reach this, you definitely will be fine for the next 30 years. There's a lot of variables that's not really taken into full account. So, for example, inflation rates, maybe what can happen to your fund. So there will be ups and downs in the market not taken into account. So use this as a rule of thumb, and I think it will get you to a good number in terms of what to aim for, and then also to understand what you need to save every month to get close to that number or over that number.
Yeah, exactly. So let's use an example. If we say I spend 35,000 rand a month, we times that by 12, gives us 420,000 rand per year. And then if we divide that by 4%, it will give us about 10.5 million rand. So in today's money, if you spend 35,000 rand a month and you retire today on this specific day and you want your money to last for 30 years, you're going to need about 10.5 million as a ballpark. It's again, as Rion mentioned, there's a lot of other variables, taxes, stuff like that could come into the equation, but just to give you kind of an idea. So this is good to know, because now you can go and sit, you know, go through your budget, see what your monthly expenses is, do your calculation, and if you're comfortable, maybe share it in the comments. This is what I need, because it always starts with awareness. Because now if you see this number, and maybe it's quite scary looking at it, like, I may be far away from this, at least that triggers the first step that, okay, maybe I should start doing this. You know, maybe I should plant the tree today so that I can sit in the shade in 20 years' time. So it's more to give us a guide and just to create that consciousness of, okay, this is what it will actually take me to retire comfortably.
Yeah, so it is a big number, and my secret behind it always, use compounding to your benefit. So start as soon as possible and save as much as possible from an early stage. I think as you go through this as well, I think it's important to mention is how to calculate the monthly expenses. So I think you need to make a few assumptions in terms of when I will be financially free, these things will be in place. So let me get to this first. So in your monthly expenses, it is a direct link to the asset base that you will require. So it's simple to see then that if you decrease your monthly expenses, your asset base required will be less, right? So if you go from 35,000 Rand and you can see in your budget, okay, well, I can cut this out. Naturally, it will, cut down on the asset base that's required. And then secondly, you need to think around the assumptions in terms of if I am financially free, in what position will I be? So let's use the example of I want to be financially free when I retire. So by the time you want to retire, there will be the assumption that you need to be at least debt-free. So you don't want to take into consideration any debt payments, for as an example. So you don't want to take into consideration your bond or car payments or any other sort of debt. So you should be debt-free before you get into financial freedom. The other thing is, if you withdraw from your retirement annuity every month, there will be a tax implication on that. So it's something that you will need to take into consideration. It can't be the gross number, or it can't be the net number. You need to look at the gross number, so the bigger number in terms of the monthly expenses. And you also need to think of how will my life change in the time till now until I will get to financial freedom. Because if you look at retirement as an example again, and I know we did say that retirement and financial freedom is not always equal, but just using as an example, you will need to think of, for example, your health. And it is just how it works, but the older you get, the more health complications can happen and the more comprehensive medical aid you will require. So for example, you might only be on a hospital plan at the moment, but if you are, close to retirement age or in your 70s or whatever, you might need to have comprehensive medical cover. So it's something you'll need to take into consideration. So when you take that monthly expenses, take those things into account and then times by 12 and then naturally divide by 4. So you need to almost think of where will I be my future self when I'm financially free.
Yeah, and also things like traveling, are you going to travel the same amount today as you would in retirement or whenever that number is for you? Being aware that this is kind of based on a 30-year time period. So if you're aiming to retire at 40 and it only lasts until 70, you've got a problem, because most people do become much older. When we do financial planning, we actually now want to plan until the age of 100, because as medicine advances, people live longer. So if you live longer, you need more money to sustain your lifestyle. So that is also something to take into consideration. When we say stop working, I think it's that the way that the world will evolve over time, I don't think careers would necessarily always stop abruptly at 65. Maybe you will continue doing some form of work or occupation or adding value, maybe some side hustle or something. So it may not be that you need that full amount at that date to sustain you, because if you still earn an income, the deficit is lot less. So there's a lot of nuances. When we go into proper financial planning, we'll run different variables and different scenarios. But as a starting point, just as a ballpark, that's a number that we need, and that's how we can calculate it.
I think that will be something quite nice to understand, actually, from people that are retired. So what do you do with all of the time that you've got now? Do you spend it to make some money? So if there are some hacks that you want to share with us, please do. I think it'd be pretty interesting for me to see, what retirees get up to make some money.
Yeah, if there's some autopsies in the viewership, drop a comment. Or if you are maybe someone young that's already reached financial freedom, do share your experience and your tips. Yeah. We'll be very interested to hear how you've done it, because it is tough. It's tough, but it's possible. Yeah.
Sorry, just lastly on that calculation, I think also that now that you've done the calculation and you've got the asset base, you need to understand that that asset base or that value of the asset base shouldn't include stuff for your lifestyle assets, as an example. So your primary residence and the cars that you drive, etc., can't be part of that asset base that you've calculated. It needs to be purely income-generating assets, so assets that will give you cash flow on a yearly or monthly basis, depending on what asset it is. But it can't be, your house, because your house will actually cost you money. Even if you paid it off completely, you'll still have rates and taxes. You'll still need to pay the water. You'll still need to pay maintenance. Like, I need to pay maintenance now for my roof that's leaking. Stuff like that will come up. It's actually an expense. It's not really an asset.
Yeah, you can't take a couple of bricks every month from your house and then sell that to earn an income. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So yes, we need to think about investment assets. We think about shares, retirement annuity, tax-free savings account, discretionary investments, investment properties for sure, because you generate an income. But yeah, a car is a liability. You're going to probably have to replace it at some point. Prime residence, unless you earn an income, you've got like a granny flat on the yard, you know, potentially thinking about that. But yes, we want to kind of exclude those big lifestyle assets and think about investment assets, the stuff that will actually, that we can sell to earn an income, or at least draw an income from in the form of dividends or interest, stuff like that.
Yes, great.
Okay, so now that we understand the definition, we know more or less how to calculate it, we need to think how do we become financially free. So we now know the technical stuff, but what are the action steps to do this? And there's generally three different rules that you can apply, which we're going to discuss. With rule one, probably quite obvious, but very important to understand, spend less than what you earn.
Yeah, I think it is an obvious rule, right? So if you want to get to financial freedom, you naturally need to invest in assets. And to invest in assets, you need to have additional income or surplus income. So it sounds obvious, but then the question is then why is there only 6% of our population that can actually retire with the same lifestyle or be financially free at retirement?
Mm.
And well, there's a few reasons, I guess. There's, I think a big part of it is our behavioral way of dealing with money, and I don't want to go into it again in detail because we did do the episode 3 on behavioral money and the money personality. So I think if you didn't see it yet, go have a look at it. But behavior plays a very big part of that. And then also stuff like, for example, you know, life happens. So yes, your budget might be looking good now. All of a sudden something happens, your life changes, and there's additional expense. And, you know, examples of that, for example, is, you know, having a kid or, you know, getting married or getting divorced. There's stuff like that will happen that will have an impact on that. So it's, again, sounds like an obvious rule, but it's not necessarily an easy rule to follow constantly throughout your life.
Yeah, and it always comes back to you have to do this. You have to remind yourself constantly, focus on spending less, and you do that by tracking your expenses, having a budget, sticking to the budget. Mm-hmm. Yes, sometimes life happens and you completely blow out the budget for that month, but then it's fine. You recoup and you restart. And yes, life throws its curveballs. It's very rare that you'll go through your entire life with everything happening as planned. There's always going to be a pothole along the way, which just means you deal with it and you reassess. Luckily, with finances and financial planning, it's all about numbers. It's all about calculations. And you can always solve a problem using numbers. So it might mean that, yes, maybe you can't retire or become financial free at the date that you wanted to. You're going to work a little bit longer, or maybe you're going to have to spend a bit less at retirement or financial freedom. So it's kind of just pulling different levers and pushing different buttons to get you to where you want to be. Being conscious of the fact that there are some potential pitfalls along the way, but that is why we need to structure our finances with a strong foundation of having stuff like emergency fund and risk management and those things in place before we get to the wealth creation, which is a topic that we'll cover in depth in the next episode. And also, sometimes everything goes according to plan. You know, you get an increase in your salary, you get a bonus, you get some tax refunds, and there's no disaster happening, but then the lifestyle creep kind of eats at you, and then you think, but now I'm earning more, I need to drive something better, my colleagues, you know, they bought this new car and I feel a bit left out with my skedonkie, so now I'm going to get that new BMW. And then unconsciously you think, maybe even if it starts with small things like, I'm going to go for drinks, or I'm going to eat out every weekend, small little expenses start to chip away at that savings percentage, and the next thing you know, you're not able to get through the end of the month, even though you're earning way more than you earned 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, an example for myself is when my wife and I just married, we stayed in like a one-bedroom flat. We were renting. Both our cars were paid off, so we had additional money. We could actually spend some money on clothes and, you know, going out to eat and stuff. And now we look back, I actually had this conversation with her the other day. you know, how do we almost just have the same amount of spending money when, you know, way back when we were, you know, newly married, my salary grew by, I don't know, almost like 4 or 5 times. Hers was like almost 2-3 times. So we're making so much more money in the time that we've been married, but we literally don't have any, like our budget is literally just, it's just grown in terms of, okay, well, now we, you still have the same amount of spending money. We're not living a, you know, extravagant life in terms of we can now buy clothes every month, you know. And yeah, so it's, lifestyle creep is something that almost like you don't, it's almost unconscious in terms of you don't actually realize that this is how far I'm going. Because if you think about it, if you just starting out with your job, just think about your money in terms of times it by 4 or 5, that's maybe somewhere where you'll be in 10 years' time. But think of, okay, well, am I going to keep my lifestyle here to actually use that 4 or 5 times more money to get closer to financial freedom?
Yeah, and that's oftentimes what people that learned about the FIRE movement early on in life do. They start out living, you know, when you studied for a degree, if you were in a position to go to university as a student, we all lived a very lean life. You know, you ate 2-minute noodles, you were fine. You ate maybe some tuna if you were lucky with that. Somehow you survived on, I survived on 2-minute noodles and bacon cubes. That is basically my food for 6 years. No, I'm kidding, I had more than that. But, you know, it was fine. It was fun because you were used to staying in the smaller room with everything you needed at that point in time. And now you start earning a salary and you think, yeah, but this is now getting a bit small, getting married. You know, same with us, we stayed in a small 2-bedroom apartment. So it was fine because we didn't have anything back then. So it was nice to kind of build from there. And now we moved to Cape Town and into a bigger place, mostly to have a at-home office to do our work. But yeah, the more, it's kind of like you get an apartment, now it seems empty. So now you buy stuff to fill it. Now you buy too much stuff, now it's too small. So now I go get a bigger apartment, now it's empty again. I buy stuff to get it full. So it's very careful, and we all suffer from that. We are no different. So we have to consciously remind ourselves, do I really need this thing? And something that helped me kind of put a break on these things is like, if I'm going to buy something new, I need to give something away. Like if I'm going to buy a new shirt, to go through my cupboard and identify a shirt that I'm going to
very
donate.
Very nice rule to live by. Yeah.
So that you don't kind of expand and swell in your lifestyle. You maybe at some point you will have to replace something because it's getting socially unacceptable to apparently wear some shirts and pants. But yeah, that's a story for another day.
The last thing on that, I think it's easier to go up in lifestyle than to go down in lifestyle. So rather keep your lifestyle the same for longer than to try and go down, because that's painful.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So spend less than you earn. Second rule, save consistently over your entire working life. And this kind of alluded to this earlier, that it's not a one big thing that you need to do. It's like little small steps every single day over your entire working life. That's a long time. If you start at the age of 25 and you work until 65, that's 40 years of every month earning a salary, spending less than you earn, saving the difference consistently over time.
Yeah, I think that's another rule of thumb that you can follow here. And I think you should be fine. I'm saying should be. If you save 15% of your gross salary, again, it's a rule of thumb. There is like ups and downs in the market. There's a lot of variables. But if you can, from the first paycheck that you earn, start saving 50% of your gross salary, you should be on the path of getting financial freedom at retirement. Now, naturally, if you want to cut that down to 35 years, like you said, and that should be more like 75%, I guess.
120%. Yeah. Yeah. So 15% is, given that you're still like in your early 20s, mid-20s, starting out, obviously the later you start, if you only start at 45, you're going to save more close to like 65, almost 70% of your salary. So it really goes up with time. So again, starting early, saving, because 15% in the grand scheme of things is not a lot if you're used to living like a student. So what I always try to tell people starting in the workplace is keep the mindset of being a student, pay yourself first, meaning open an investment account, let the debit order go off before you decide to spend anything. Mm. Put, you know, try and put 15% into that, then spend what's left over, because then you, it's guilt-free. But if you don't do that, if you try to spend what's left after you kind of took care of yourself, then you're never going to get to 15% or more than that. And to add to that, so now we've talked about putting away 15% minimum. So that is one component. We need to invest consistently to build up those retirement savings. But the second component is we now need to keep it there. It needs to grow with time. We need to have that compound interest. Because if you're now going to take some of that money back to kind of service your, today's instant gratification, then you're really going to rob your future self, especially with stuff like the two-pot system getting implemented. If you resign from your job and you have a pension or provident fund, there's a as the rules currently stand, you can actually withdraw your money, which, yes, sometimes there's an emergency and there's no other way, you need to feed your family, then, you know, that's an option. But it's something that you really need to try and avoid at all costs, because you've worked so hard to live below your means to save the difference for retirement. If you're going to take that away, you're robbing yourself from decades of compound growth, which is really going to sting later in life.
Yeah, no, we've been touching on compounding growth quite a lot, but if you withdraw that money, you effectively break your curve. You smash it to pieces and it doesn't apply anymore. You start from scratch. And yeah, I think the two-pot rule system actually will help some people in that sense. So, you know, some people might have resigned and taken all of their retirement savings out, whereas now it will, you know, two-thirds will still be retirement annuity fund. So I think that's a good thing. And I think in the long term, we'll see more people have actually more retirement savings at the end of their working life. But yeah, I think a two-pot system is quite an interesting topic. And I know you'll cover it on Money Marks. Mm. So yeah, keeping you accountable. So everyone, if you look at this, go to Money Marks on YouTube and look out for that video coming out soon.
Mm. Yeah, it's very important to understand that, yes, in some cases you might need to access that money for emergency, but that's, again, we need to take a step back and think, if we have an emergency, we need to have an emergency fund. Your retirement savings is not your emergency fund. It should not be thought about, oh, it's fine, you know, I've got that money if something happens. No, you need to build up a separate emergency fund with your bank or within a money market for that specific reason that something happens. That's the whole purpose of an emergency fund, is to prevent you from going into debt and to prevent you from trying to take your retirement savings and robbing your future self. And that is why it's very important.
Yeah, retirement money shouldn't even be thought of as emergency.
Should forget about it.
Yeah, actually, a lot of people ask me, two-pot system is like, just forget about two-pot system. It doesn't really apply. Like, don't take your money. Don't shoot yourself in the foot here.
Yeah,
for me, that retirement money is retirement money. Don't even think about it.
Yeah, you're just going to pay taxes. Like you don't get that money for free. You pay a much more unfavorable tax rate. So if you want to make Sash happy, go take that money out.
Exactly.
But it's not going to end well.
Just leave your retirement savings.
Yeah, you've worked hard to save, so leave it.
Leave it.
And oftentimes we need to protect ourselves from ourselves, because if we intervene too much, then it's going to get to a point where we're going to make mistakes, because we have all of, you know, here on the news, this and that, and we're going to be scared they're going to take our money and then we liquidate it. And as soon as you have more money, you're probably going to spend it. And then it's no point. You've just kind of destroyed all the hard work you've done up to that point.
Exactly.
So some tough love there, but that's because we want you guys to be successful.
Yep.
All right. So then there's number three, the third rule, follow the financial freedom pyramid. So Rian, can you explain to us what this pyramid entails?
Yeah. So this pyramid is something I came up with as I did my own studies a few years ago in terms of how to structure my money. And it does follow, you know, personal finance principles or rules that you will find all over the internet. So follow, for example, Dave Ramsey. It won't be far off from his model, if I can call it like that. But it's effectively using a triangle, and I'm using a triangle because it is quite easy to understand, and there's a lot of theories, I guess, or stuff that build on a triangle, like, I don't know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs and the food pyramid and, what you know, all of those. And yeah, let's not go there. But yeah, I'm using it because it's simple and it's easy to understand, and why some stuff is placed where. So it's really a triangle, and I'm breaking it down into three areas, so in three phases. So the first one is your foundational phase. The second one is in the middle, which is your transitional phase. And then the last one is where you'll go into wealth. And we'll get to that now. So the first phase is really focusing on a few things that you need to get right in your personal finance plan to really be successful anywhere else. It is foundational and you need to start with it. So it is stuff like budgeting, risk management, avoiding and disposing of bad debt, and your emergency fund. So all those things is very important to get into place before you can start thinking about, you know, all the other nice and more interesting topics. But yeah, if we can just quickly touch on each of these very briefly, because I know we'll probably, you know, cover all of these in separate episodes. And risk management, for example, is quite a meaty topic and not something that we can cover in 2 minutes. But each of these, if we can just quickly go through them, why is it important? Why is it in the foundational phase? And what's the benefits? So starting off with the budget, I think the budget is crucially necessary to follow rules 1 and 2. So to understand how can I live within my means and to understand how can I save 50% of my gross income. But it is also having the tool there, but then sticking to it. So I think this is probably something that a lot of people struggle with, and including me, and I've, you know, everyone is human. So and life stuff happens, like we discussed earlier as well. But I think it's important to have a realistic budget, and that's probably the most crucial thing.
Yeah, and if we talk about budget, I think the word budget always has this kind of negative connotation, like, oh, it's so much trouble and effort to put it together. And, you know, I really have to go into my bank statements. And yes, you do.
Yes.
If you think about it, if you spend 40 hours a week working for money, you know, you're putting your life there on the line, you're grafting, you're earning an income. That's 160 hours a month on average. So if you think you're spending 160 hours a month to earn an income, why won't you spend 1 hour a month to actually manage your money, you know, to go through your bank statements? Because it's not really not that bad. It doesn't take so long. I do my wife and I and my business's budget every single month. It takes me about an hour on a Saturday morning once a month. Then I'm done. Mm. So there really is no excuse. If you want to become financially free, then I see a budget, or I refer to it more as a spending plan, knowing where your money is going and knowing where you're going to tell it to go. It is like the heartbeat of any financial plan. If you don't have a heartbeat, you're dead. If you don't have a budget, your plan is dead. It's as simple as that. There's no way around it.
Exactly.
If you run a business, you need to know where your income is coming in, your expenses are going out. Then you know how to run a business. So treat your own finances like you are running a business. And that starts with a budget.
Yeah, I think maybe to just quickly touch on my point I made earlier as well, you need to have a realistic budget. So don't set something like, for example, you know, I'm going to only spend 3,000 rand on food for a family of four. Mm. I mean, you can probably do it if you only eat rice and beans, but be realistic. So really look at your expenses over the last 3 months and then use an average of that. Mm. That's something that you can actually use and, you know, it's realistic and you can stick to that budget.
Yeah.
If it's unrealistic, you'll ultimately get to the end of the month and almost feel like demotivated because I didn't stick to my plan. Secondly is, like you said, tracking it on a monthly basis. It's so important to, you know, constantly look at what it is. It's not a tool that you can use once a year. It's not something you look at for an hour once a year and say, okay, well, this is more or less my budget. I'll you know, hopefully stick to it.
Yeah. Don't wing it. You're going to wing it, you're going to get it wrong. Trust me, I've seen it happen too often. Right, so after putting a budget in place, you will have a very good idea of where your money is going. And kind of next step after that is understanding the type of debt you have. So there's good debt, there's bad debt, there's neutral debt. Not going to go into too much detail today, but bad debt is short-term debt. It's like your credit cards, personal loans, temporary loans, overdrafts. Those ugly little monsters that charges you like 19, 20, 21% in interest. So you want to kill them off first. Then we have good debt, or could be considered good debt, where you take out debt to buy an asset like an investment property that earns you an income, or maybe a student loan that help you to get a degree to earn more money, or a business loan that will generate an income. So it's being conscious of all your debts and then listing them and then starting to pay them off aggressively. There are two main strategies, the avalanche method and the snowball method. We will make an episode that we cover this in much more detail, but it is very important, still part of the foundational phase, to pay off that bad debt, to attack it like the plague.
Yeah, and I think in foundational phase, it's specifically bad debt, like you mentioned. So the unsecured short-term debt, those are the ones that you need to get off quickly and as fast as possible, and then avoid it like the plague.
Yeah, exactly. And then after that, which we have alluded to earlier, you need to build the emergency fund that has to serve that cushion when there's a financial blow. You know, you lose your job, you still need to pay your bills, you still need to pay your rent, and you still need to eat. So having an emergency fund in short-term investment or short-term savings, like a money market fund or a bank savings account, to avoid going into bad debt, to avoid using the credit card to fund your basic needs, and to avoid you from wanting to cash out that pension or provident fund because now things are a problem. And usually it depends on your specific situation, but if you can aim for 3 months worth of living expenses. So now you've done your budget, you know what your expenses are per month on average that you've tracked. So to multiply that by 3, that is a good ballpark to work from. If you have kids, then it's probably good to try and aim for 6 months. If you own a business, maybe 12 months. But if you can get to 3 months, you will be in a very strong financial foundation position.
Yeah, and these expenses are not similar to the ones we talked about with the financial freedom calculation. These are all your expenses. You need to cover bond payments, rent payments, all of those type of things as well. Now, you mentioned why it's important and how to save it and how much to save for it. I think building up a emergency fund also gets you into this habit of, you know, spending less than what you earn and saving every month, additionally to your retirement, as an example. So it gets you into this almost habit in terms of I need to put away every month, which is crucial as well.
Yeah, it's again, it's not necessarily the amount, it's the habit that you need to learn. And if you start early in your career, you don't have a lot of stuff going on, this is the first thing you need to focus on. So don't worry about retirement annuities and tax-free savings accounts and crypto arbitrage and forex trading and all these names. If you don't have an emergency fund, that's your first focus. So you need to take a step back and start building that thing. And it's easy thing. It's not a complicated thing to build up. If you want to make it very easy, use your bank savings account for that. That's completely fine.
Yeah. Just lastly, in the foundational phase, and is the risk management that I've put in there. And it's a very meaty topic, so I'm not going to cover it. But it's really just saying everything that you've built up until now, just protect it. And the principle behind risk management in this phase is really just not to spend too much thought, energy on this. It is important, but it is not the most important thing. But just almost protect what you've got at this point in time and avoid getting into financial trouble because of something that happened. So as an example, just if you have a car, insure it, because it can almost push you into financial ruin when you really don't need it, like at the start of your journey. So I think it is important to think of from the beginning, and risk management will probably be the one that runs throughout the process. So, and it might actually become a lot more complex as you grow into the process, and you've got a lot more stuff to insure or to protect.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something in foundational phase, and just because you need to think of it already, but it's just reiterating this point, you shouldn't be spending hours and hours and hours worried about this or staying up at night about risk management. Just protect what you have.
Yeah. So it typically involves stuff like long-term insurance, which is income protection, protecting your ability to an income, which is your greatest asset. Stuff like disability and critical illness, life cover if it's needed for you, medical aid, medical bills can get quite expensive. So want to protect that. Short-term insurance on a car, on the house. And, you know, as Rion said, you want to protect yourself from these big financial ruin events that could wipe out your wealth completely, because it's no point in building up an entire investment portfolio and then financial disaster strikes and you need to liquidate everything to pay it off. Then you start at zero again. So it is very important. It's quite a difficult topic to always understand how much I need and can I afford it, and measuring the risk versus the reward, but it's something that you should at least consider before you move on to phase two.
Yeah. So just to close off on phase one is really something that you will need to look at in the short term. So it's not something that should take you a decade. It's something that you should be able to put on, you know, to get under your knees or under the knee, is that the saying? I don't know.
Onder die knie.
Onder die knie is the Afrikaans saying, well, it's probably, I don't know if it's an English one, but it's something that you need to, really get into quite quickly. So if it takes you more than 5 years, you know, you need to start thinking, am I doing this right? So it's almost short, bang, yes, I've got the foundation right. I've got my behavior set. I've got my habits in place. Now I can start thinking of phase two. Now phase two, it's now the transition phase, like I said. So you really start looking at more long-term thinking. So this is where you make sure that you save constantly, so at least 15%, like we said earlier, towards your retirement. And this is then also where you start tackling all of your longer-term debts. So you will start tackling your mortgage bond faster. You will start tackling car debt and trying to stay out of car debt as far as you can. I mean, I think it's difficult in these days. Cars are so expensive, whether it's new or secondhand. So you'll probably have some car debt, but try and get it off as quickly as possible, and then, you know, put that that surplus money that you've got into paying off your primary residence if you've already bought.
Yeah. Being debt-free is liberating, not only from a financial standpoint, but also from emotional and psychological standpoint of knowing that, you know, this is now mine. I don't have to pay someone else. I don't have to make the banks rich. So it is tough paying off a house. It takes long. So phase two could mean anything from 1 year to 40 years or beyond. It's quite a long one. But before you graduate to phase two, you need to first make sure phase one is in place. Because if you don't, you're building a house on cards with the foundation being very like soggy types of, almost like a rusk. You're building your house of cards and soggy cards. It's going to collapse. So you need to make sure that that's in place and then move on to the second one.
Yeah, and I think why this is the transition phase, I think if you get to a point where you're debt-free, completely debt-free in terms of house as well, it might put you in such a wonderful position in terms of the money that's then, you know, available to you to go and invest. I mean, just imagine, I guess most people's budget is like biggest line item is probably mortgage or rent. Just imagine that whole line item goes into investing. I mean, you can like literally shoot up in wealth quite quickly.
No. Yeah, and it's also in that sense, it's an asset that you can sell or downscale in the future. So once you are done with phase two, you kind of enter phase three, which is also kind of the top end of Maslow's hierarchy. It's the self-actualization peak performance of life. It's where you really are now, you know, you've done phase one, you've done phase two, house is paid off. You are actually at a point where you've got enough, essentially. Yes. You've reached financial freedom. So what do you then do once you hit that point? Like, what is the next step? What's after that? What's after the rainbow?
I guess the next step is then to start thinking of how do I build my wealth? So naturally for yourself, but in this terms for me personally, if I get to the stage, you will be thinking of how do I create generational wealth? So how will I create wealth that will last for my children's children? So I think if you're fortunate enough to actually reach this triangle, and I think this is maybe important to mention, is not everyone will reach this. Like we said, only 6% of people actually reach where, you know, end of phase two by retirement, so to be financially free. Going into wealth is now the next step. So I think if you are fortunate enough to be in this position, you need to think of generational wealth and how to, you know, grow this for your family.
Yeah. And once you get to a point where you've got enough or you've got more than enough, I think it's also important to think, how can I now give back? Because I think that is how we as a community, as South Africans, can help uplift each other. And if you are in a fortunate position, you're part of that 6% or maybe that 1% or that 0.1% that reaches that level of wealth, start thinking about how can I give back? Because, you know, it's no point in dying with too much money. You're just going to pay a bunch of taxes. So yes, if you have children and you want to make sure that they're going to be set up for life, do that. Make sure they can get a good degree, maybe have a head start in life. Also teach them how to actually manage the money that they're going to get so they don't become spoiled brats.
Critical.
But also once that is taken care of, how can I now plow back into the community and help to build, even if it's not money, but more the skill sets? Because if you reach this level of success, you've built up a lot of skills that you can share and help someone else, you know, share your time, share your knowledge. And that is really, I think, where we all want to end up at that level. We don't have to work for money. You do it because you like what you do. And you wake up every morning energized because you can decide today, I want to do this. I'm not forced to work.
Yeah. So I think just to close off on the triangle, the financial freedom pyramid or triangle, it's a sequence that we need to follow, and there's a reason for that sequence. So naturally you start from the bottom, and it's really almost encompassing the financial habits and behavioral aspects that we spoke about in the last episode, with the more technical financial aspects of that as well. And then as you transition into wealth, you will follow logical steps to get there. And for me, this makes the most logical sense in terms of how to get there. And like you said, it's not building your triangle almost like upside down or on a, you know, house of cards or soggy cards, like you said.
House of skakies. Yeah, it's starting from the bottom, now we're here. You have to start at the bottom. Just as you start in your career at the intern level and you build yourself up to senior manager, that's how life works. And you can't be the manager when you start out, because you don't have the skills yet. So you can't be dabbling in the advanced investment strategies of end of phase two when you don't yet have the foundation of how do I actually manage my money. And that's what we're trying to teach, and it's very much behavioral. There's the technical side again, but the behavior, like understanding how I think about money, what is my personality trait, which we covered in the previous video if you want to go check it out, and understanding myself first and how I think about money, and then capitalizing on my strengths and being conscious of my weaknesses and working on to improve that. That is how you're going to graduate from phase one to two to three and get to that point of life is good. Finally, I've made it. Yes. So this wraps up kind of the financial freedom conversation. So now that you know how to get to that point, the next episode, we're going to cover what wealth really means. Like once you hit that phase two, mid phase two, end of phase two, what is wealth really? You know, what do we do to get to wealth? And once we've reached that, how do we then kind of equate if that is enough? And how do we become wealthy? So we're going to cover that. We hope to see you guys there. So my name is Pieter de Villiers. This is Rion Knutse. We are the co-hosts from the Braaibox podcast. And we hope to see you in the next episode where we will cover all things wealth. So thank you so much for joining in. We hope to see you next time.
Cool. See you then.
Cheers.